Live from Houston, Texas, this is Big Ideas Small Business with your host, Laura Camrath and Brian Gendron. And now, the music of Max Flynn.
I'm starting to feel a little crazy again. I think it's time I start to pack my things.
Hey, Brian.
Laura Camrath.
How's it going?
It is going well.
Happy Tuesday.
It is.
Happy March.
It really is a happy Tuesday. You been outside today?
Yeah, it's like the first sunny day we've had in probably a month.
I'm pretty sure God spends March in Texas.
Yeah.
It is perfect weather out there, so we're not going to take too much time on this podcast. We want to get outside, get out and vote. You vote yet?
I didn't, but I have all my picks. I'm going to go this evening.
I am as well. So, but we're happy to be here with y'all. It's Big Ideas Small Business.
Big Ideas Small Business.
And we took a week off because Travel Pants over here was at another conference.
I was at the Digital Marketer Traffic and Conversion Summit. So, that's probably one of the biggest digital marketing conferences in the world. It had some 6,000 digital marketers and, and then small business owners, people who were there just wanting to learn about digital marketing and how to use it better in their business. And it was a pretty busy conference. There were a lot of speakers. There were some really, really, really good talks. I had some good takeaways and met some great people and even went to my first ever 20s reggae party.
You know, I saw a live band doing Bob Marley. You had a Facebook Live going at one point,
yeah.
So I was right there with you.
And we were in 20s costumes.
That's right.
It was my first and probably last 20s reggae party.
You never know. You never know. So that's 6,000 marketers.
Yeah.
And was it San Diego? No.
Yeah.
Yes.
San Diego.
Okay, good. I love San Diego. And what was your, I guess, biggest takeaway, put you on the spot, of the conference in digital marketing?
I would say, so there's a gentleman named Perry Belcher, and I listened to his talk, and he was speaking on email marketing best practices for, subject lines, methodology generally. And he was not only a funny guy, which I'm not gonna get into that, but so he had some pretty funny email. Well, yeah, one of the recommendations he had for email headlines and subject lines was look for something in the news or something that people are talking about in general, and write a subject line around that, because just because it's current events, people will click on it.
Right.
So there was that, and also he had a little bar chart that showed that, day zero of someone opting in for something of yours, or day one, the first day, say I go to Brian's website and he had something that said, get our free case study to learn how, KnockServe can help you with your IT. And say I go to his website and I download it, immediately Perry Belcher says he would send me 5 emails. And so most people are like, I don't want to overload people with email. I don't want to scare people away. And
right.
But he also had a little bar chart that showed the first day, immediately after I opt in, I'm the most likely to open an email from you. Every day after that, it goes down by like a quarter until like on day 4, I'm like a quarter as likely to open an email after I opted in for that free thing than on day 1.
Hmm.
So that was a pretty big takeaway for me, because it kind of went against conventional email marketing theory where you kind of send like one email a day for 6 days or something. He was saying, no, I send 5 emails, and they were all emails like, oh, here, I just here's your free gift and blah blah blah, and then, oh, I have an extra free thing here for you. And so they were all emails that you'd be like, oh, why wouldn't I open that?
Mm-hmm.
And especially when that person is hot, they're interested, they went to your website or they clicked on your ad or whatever they did, they expressed interest, and you're boom hitting them right out the bat rather than just like kind of waiting in the background to see if they still care.
Yeah, I don't think we'd advise that. But that a couple of things you said there. I mean, subject lines, the mailboxes are just littered with crap. And so yeah. Subject lines are your one way to stand out, and sometimes your one shot to stand out. The idea that what he was saying goes against conventional digital marketing wisdom, I guess is what you said, it's usually those things can be good because that's what everybody else is doing. The other 6,000 that were there and the other 30,000 that weren't, that are worth anything, they're doing the same thing. So
okay, I have to give you one of Perry Belcher's subject lines.
I'm scared.
he like got this seriously from the news. It said, "Naked man arrested for carrying concealed weapon."
That was not me, although I wouldn't be shocked if that was in Texas. Okay.
I don't know. The whole entire room cracked up when he said it. But.
See, he has fun with it. And I do think, there is the thing, the people who call and be like, well, this is God, and like God has a better chance of getting a hold of you than I do or whatever, get a return call. So, I mean, sometimes you just, at the end of the day, you have fun with it, and you'll especially if that's your personality, guess what? You're going to attract customers that like to have fun.
Yeah.
Right. So, well, that's interesting.
But,
Perry?
it was great. Perry Belcher was that guy's name. But there, there were a lot of really great speakers on various different topics, everything from things to do with search and SEO and driving traffic to your website to, things like email marketing, social media, chatbots, which is kind of the new hot thing. And, there were lots of people. There were all kinds of vendor tables from digital marketing companies doing all kinds of different things.
We didn't really plan a Tech for Granted, but we could hit like Drift or something.
Oh, as Buzzsprout.
Or Buzzsprout. Okay, we'll get to it. All right. That sounds fun, so we'll get to it. You were out of town prancing about San Diego. It sounds like it was pretty valuable. You see your time. It looked like a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I was here back in Houston, and we had the Cyber Summit. It was the second annual, really neat. A gentleman from Allegiance Bank, he walked us through a live hack, and it blew my mind. Like, he hacked into Memorial Hermann, and it felt really real. And at the end, he's like, it wasn't really Memorial Hermann. Everybody's like, okay, good. But it was a really, really cool experience to go through and be able to. The stealing passwords wasn't even the hard part. It was stealing 5,000 medical records that are valued at $1,000
piece. Ryan, I had no idea.
No. And he ended it. He's just like, I'm retired, because that's $1,000 times 5,000 is $5 million.
Yeah.
And he was using widely available tools, Kali Linux and things that are just free.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of playing the role of just a, what do you call him, a script kitty. That it's just a kid that can watch YouTube videos, figure this stuff out, find a website that's vulnerable, and make it rich. Scary,
yeah.
But really entertaining. So that was the highlight of our time apart.
Yeah.
So, but cool. Today, when you got back here, I was trying to think of some topics, and I had a couple people that were one person that was struggling that the name of his company was attracting the wrong type of customers.
Huh.
Which is interesting. And then I had another company that I know of that has rebranded a few times now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they finally got it. And I'm excited for them. Uh-huh. Although I'm not going to share any names. I didn't ask them in advance. But So it just got me thinking about naming in general. And it brought me back to when I was naming my company and what my strategies were. And I thought we could just share some of that. Because like you were telling me, it's not that important.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, I guess what I would say about that, especially for people who are just getting started, and they're trying to come up with a name for their business, and they are freaking out and overanalyzing, and they don't know what to do. And, you can spend a lot of time.
Too much time.
Naming your company and give yourself massive headaches over it. And ultimately, it's not really about what you're called. It's about what do you deliver, how do you build relationships, how do you build your brand. I would say, it's good to have a good name, but it's more important to get your business running.
That's right.
So, and the other thing is, one of the hardest things is people want to have a .com.
Yes.
And so some of the challenge lies in, I can think of, 2,000 great names for my business, but all the .coms are already taken.
Right.
So I would say like the things to consider when you're picking a name is not only what do I want to be called, but is a .com available. Of course, you can always do, you know, .net or .com. You know, something else,
or
but
put a dash somewhere in there,
you know,
or whatever.
The truth is, like, people just remember .coms better,
right? You know, that I agree with that. That was my exercise, was like, I need to get something that's short, something that's relevant, like kind of keyword rich in some ways. But I could
I missed the boat on the short,
yes, but still, yours it can be short or descriptive in the long form, which is what yours is. It's, you know, keyword relevant. .com. But, you know, I was just thinking about it, where I spent a ton of time pulling my hair out, searching for .com, searching for ones that they weren't going to charge me $5,000 for to start or whatever it was. You know, it's kind of short-sighted, isn't it? Isn't it kind of assuming that the web is always going to be as relevant as it is today?
Yeah.
It may take a different shape or form, and .coms may not matter in 5 years, you think about it.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing I would say to keep in mind is check for trademarks.
Yes.
And just make sure that you check with your state and make sure your name's not already taken.
That's right.
As an LLC or a corporation.
I don't know about everybody's state, but in Texas, they charge you $1 per search. Do you remember doing that? Or maybe your lawyer did it. I don't know.
But I did it. I did it myself, and I don't remember paying anything. Maybe I did pay something, but I just don't remember.
The SOS website. Yep, I've done that search many times. So, but yeah, I mean, that was my exercise. And you just write for, it was like 3 days, like three full days on this stupid topic of what is my name going to be. And I know it's not entirely stupid, but like Nike, what does Nike mean? It doesn't mean anything. It does now, but when they started, it didn't, right?
I think Nike was actually a Greek god, wasn't he?
Exactly. But you don't associate it with shoes.
Yeah, he didn't have an association with
shoes. Maybe had sandals at best.
I think he was running. I mean, there's like marathon was when the, you know, I don't
right,
know.
But the average consumer, and I'm sure there is a meaning behind it, but the average consumer isn't going to, like, you know, as they're
associate
standing in line looking at Adidas
shoes
versus Nike and be like, that god, Greek god running is what did it. No, they paid a lot of the best athletes in the world and grew their brand to one of the best brands in the world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, and the other piece is, you know, naming your company may not even be as important as naming maybe products if you're creating products and things like that. That certainly has some value, I believe, making sure that your product name matches the utility of the product or the use of the product. That can be powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, not everything we create can be Frisbee, which becomes the name of the thing that
Kleenex.
It is. Yeah, or Kleenex, exactly.
But I mean,
exactly.
Look at why did the, you know, nobody, I'm sure nobody originally said, oh, facial tissues, Kleenex. I mean, what does Kleenex, that word, even mean? Nothing.
Right.
You know, they made it mean something because they built a brand around it.
Right.
You know, even in England, they don't call it a vacuum cleaner. They call it a Hoover.
That's right.
Because of the brand.
Right.
I mean, so everybody, for your reference, if you don't know, Brian's company is called KnockServe, and my company is called Zebra Marketing Solutions. Mm-hmm. Why is my company called Zebra Marketing Solutions? Honestly, because I wanted my business name to remind me of fun, and for some reason, you know, for particular reasons, I associate zebras with fun, and I thought it would make cool branding. And and so, I mean, really, I'm a solopreneur. I work independently. And so my brand is a combination of that company name and me. And, you know, even in my Facebook page, the profile image is a picture of me. I use my image as part of my brand because my company is tied, you know, as it has to be to me. So I would say, like, if you're a solopreneur, you might want to consider that, like, your name could be your brand. If you want to grow the company and sell the company, you know, if you want to hire employees and you want the company not to be associated with you, you want to be able to, you know, sell it. And maybe you'd consider not calling it your name, like maybe it's not Brian Gendron IT Consulting, but
right. You know. Yeah, and so that's kind of the genesis of your company, and I'll get into mine in a second, but one of the things I was thinking about when I was putting this together was, number one, you shouldn't let it slow you down from you know, conducting business. You can do a create your business name. It can be whatever you want, just your initials of your name and your wife's name or whatever it is, and just get it registered with the state as long as it's available. Yeah. And then you can do a DBA, doing business as, or an assumed name, and you can actually do that multiple times.
Yeah.
So you can really, the foundation of your business legally can remain the same, and then people will associate you with your associated name or DBA, and they can write you checks to that and everything. It operates just like anything else. So,
yeah.
Number one, you don't have to slow that process down. Get your business started.
Yeah.
And it can be changed just as quickly. But I was also thinking about, you know, hers is based on an extension of her personality. The zebra's fun. That's how she associates. Instead of a word association, mine is an industry name, which is NOC, Network Operations Center Service. So it's one of those word mashes, which are kind of popular as you're trying to find the .com. All the English words are taken. So let's crash two words together. So that's where mine came from. But I was also thinking about, search engine, geo search engine optimization. So like if you own a dry cleaner and you've got 10 of them in Houston, you know, you can name one of them Montrose Dry Cleaners. You can name one Katy Dry Cleaners, and those can all be individual DBAs.
Yeah.
But then your name helps you come up faster in local search, theoretically.
Yeah.
So you've got that ability, too, to use your local name, but still have a separate company entity name, right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's a lot of things you can do, but what we don't want you to do at all costs is to spend most of your energy and time here. Yeah. You'll wear yourself out on the stuff that really isn't that important.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, don't spend endless amounts of time agonizing over it. You can agonize a little bit, but you know, pick something and run with it and just don't look back too much.
and when I was doing it, I was just kind of chasing light bulbs. So I think I was fairly efficient with it. And I was just like, hey, I have an idea. Let me go check to see if the .com's available. Nope. And did that like 30 times, but never really like sat down and just and really spent too much time on it, because that's inefficient use of your time.
Yeah.
You know, and then just the two quick stories. So I had the one person that started their company a couple of years ago. They're good friends of mine, and I hated the name. I never told them, but I hated it. And I think they realized it and then started moving away from it, and they created another company. I'm like, I don't really like that either. And then they've since moved again, and they've collected customers that whole time and maintained good customers while changing their name. And I think just last week they launched a brand that's just perfect. The branding's good. The color's good. The name's good. The .com's there. And it's like, I feel so happy for them. But it's just it just shows you that you can move around and pivot, especially early on. Later, it becomes much harder.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not something you need to beat yourself over today, because you can change it.
Yeah.
And then the other one was a friend of mine who's up in Montana. He started a business, and he's getting customers, but then his customers are expecting additional services based on what he named his company. And I get it. So he's like, man, I don't want to do those services. Like, you don't want to do the extra stuff. And he had a valid point. He would actually almost have to shift his industry to get into something he really wasn't into based on his name. And it just happened. It kept happening time and time again. So yeah, he's like, I think I need to make a shift in my name. And those things happen, but it's so easy to do in the beginning.
Yeah.
And so don't think it's permanent. It's absolutely something you can change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Yeah. Or you could be like Ruggles Green and take $125,000 worth of illegal fish or whatever happened to them, and then try to get your name away from it and change it to Bella Green.
I never heard.
That's pretty much what happened. I mean, so if you ever try to go to Ruggles Green now in Houston, it just doesn't exist. It's now Bella Green.
Crazy.
Same food, same concept. I still go there a lot. Eat their illegal fish.
Is it at least good illegal fish?
Yes, I find it to be delicious. So,
all right.
Thought leadership. Ready?
Yeah. So I brought a book today called The Consulting Bible. Everything you need to know to create and expand a seven-figure consulting practice. And it's by Alan Weiss, PhD. And so I did read this book early on in my starting my business phases. And he actually did have a section talking about, you know, picking a name and what do I say, what do I call myself? And he said exactly that. Don't spend all your time trying to figure out what to call your business. Just pick something and go with it. But he's also got some really, really great chapters in here. One of them's on branding, and that's really a good tie-in to what we're talking about here today, just creating and nurturing a brand. A brand is a uniform expression of quality. It may be a work, a phrase, a logo, or your name. The ultimate brand is your name, as in, get me Jason Wilson or get me Brian Gendron. The three requirements for a powerful brand are you identify a market need, you have the competency, and you are passionate. And so he's got, you know, a whole section. He's even got a pyramid, a branding pyramid here, just talking about kind of levels of brand building. And, you know, I think that's ultimately the most important part, even more than what are you called. But like Brian was saying, you know, Nike or Kleenex didn't mean anything to anyone until they made it mean something. Mm-hmm. So it's what you make your brand mean. I mean, KnockServe doesn't really mean anything. It's what he makes it mean. Yeah. But I think if you check out this book, you'll find a lot of great chapters. He's got, you know, the genesis, consulting as a profession, origins and evolution, talking about just the role of the consultant, and chapter two, creation, how to establish and improve your firm's presence, talking about legal and financial issues, administrative support and resources, emotional support and resources. I mean, that's all really important stuff for people starting a business. but yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think that you guys would too, so check it out.
The Consulting Bible, everything you need to know to create and expand a seven-figure consulting practice. Alan Weiss, PhD, which that could be something I crack open. I think that's all that stuff's really relevant. I'm in the consulting business myself, so. Thank you, Laura.
Anytime.
So, tech for granted on the fly.
Oh, so I wanted to talk about Buzzsprout.
Buzzsprout.
So I'm not endorsing Buzzsprout because I haven't used it yet. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's not good. I'm not saying like, oh, you have to go get it right now. I'm just saying I ran across this service at the Digital Marketers Traffic and Conversion Summit. They had a booth there. They actually had a whole podcasting station where people could come in and record an episode. And I mean, that was pretty cool. But
we were like, I'm an experienced podcaster.
Yeah. But the service they offer, I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. They're basically kind of like a portal. I don't know if anyone here has used Hootsuite for posting or Buffer for posting on social media. It's kind of like a portal where, you know, you can put a post up and post it to multiple social media channels. Well, Buzzsprout is kind of like that for podcasting in a way. Basically, you can upload your podcast audio file there, and you can set it up to automatically post to iTunes, Spotify, and your website. And they were offering a free trial at the conference, but the paid version starts at $12.99 a month for 3 hours of audio, which, you know,
covers us.
Yeah, for a lot of people, I think that would be sufficient. But, you know, for a lot of people, they're like, oh, I don't know how to get my stuff onto Spotify and iTunes, and how do I get it onto my website? And so for $12.99 a month, these guys have that kind of covered where, you know, all you have to do is take care of your audio file, get that how you want it, and, you know, upload it, and it kind of shoots it out to these multiple channels.
Yeah, yeah. So I manage all the back end stuff for our podcast, and I do. I put it on our website, and then, you know, for the most part, I think, and maybe I'm wrong, call my bullshit on this, but I think that probably, I would think like 80% of people are either iTunes or Google Play, but you might be right. I mean, SoundCloud and Spotify, why neglect that part of the market?
Yeah.
And it would take extra effort for me to push, I believe, to push that. I know for SoundCloud, I haven't looked at Spotify.
Yeah.
But for the most part, for what we do, I take it, get it on our WordPress site. There's a plugin I get from Blueberry called PowerCast or PodPower, I think it is. And it gets it ready for Apple and Google, and then I'm done with it. Fairly easy, but that service sounds pretty good. The one I've been cautioned about those types of services in that, you know, you don't, for whatever this is worth, when you, I was recommended by a friend of mine that's been doing podcasting for a long time, that put it on your own website and maintain control of that data. I guess what happens is, like, over time, you know, their fee structures can change or things might change. I'm not quite sure what his point was, but he's like, it's on, yours is on WordPress. Okay, good. Keep it there. was kind of what he said. So I mean, I don't know. I'll have to talk to him again about what the validity of that, but that stuff, I'm sure that was a popular booth at the,
yeah. I mean, I don't know. I actually signed up for a free trial, but I haven't cracked it open yet to see.
I'll give you the source file.
Really,
let's try it. No harm in trying everything. Maybe it is the answer. Maybe it makes things more efficient. Yeah. I have an intern, and I handed her like a 18-step process to uploading our podcast.
Oh, well.
Maybe it could just be two or something.
Yeah, I mean, it looked to me like, I mean, and they might have had more than just iTunes and Spotify and the WordPress. You know, I'm not sure because I haven't opened it up yet, but. Mm. But you know, it just caught my eye. I was like, what? This looks kind of cool.
Yeah, and I should say, you know, I've been doing websites for a long freaking time. So I mean, not everybody's necessarily is, you know, web savvy. Not that it's that complicated, but wouldn't you rather have something that's GUI? Just here, drop this here, and you're done.
Yeah,
because it took me some time to figure that.
Like Hootsuite, you know, I could go to like Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and, you know, all the social media channels and post it independently. But like, why do that when you can do it in one place?
So to me, that says the barrier to entry to podcast has become even easier or lower. And now we need to really get this thing to take off. Start listening to us. Don't listen to anybody else.
Let's pump this thing up.
Yeah, let's go. All right. So tell a friend. So this is Big Ideas Small Business with Brian Gendron, Laura Camrath. Laura, anything else?
No, I'm ready to go out and run around in the sunshine.
Yeah, and go vote. All right. Well, y'all have a good day. go out and close some business.
Big Ideas Small Business.
Central Texas rains, the strongest drink I've found. Thank you for listening to Big Ideas Small Business. Follow us at BISB Media and visit our website at www.bisbmedia.com.